Check.
Check, check. Mic one, two.
Mic. I actually thought of like two different outtakes for this one.
Okay.
Wait, I got a one of them. Okay.
Let's script them. Yeah, let's
Okay.
not make it natural.
I have two. And the podcast begins with a long, exasperated sigh.
That might work.
The other one is, this is something we had to do to ourselves.
I like the first one.
Welcome to Know Your Rights, a music podcast from two guys who know just enough about songwriting to start a podcast about.
Follow Rob
and Colton,
as each week we dive into a different band or songwriter and discuss what makes them great,
okay, or otherwise.
Music is law,
and we know our rights. I've got another.
Welcome!
Welcome,
everybody. Get ready for us to hog the intellectual spotlight.
Oh, how many of these do we have? We have a number. Maybe that's it.
Max gave us a lot. Gave us a lot, buddy.
The gift that keeps on giving, I think.
And at some point, you go like, I don't want any more gifts. Max Bemis, it's all right. You did your deed.
Welcome to Bass Blown Entertainment Presents Know Your Rights. What is our email, Rob?
It is know.your.WRITES .podcast@gmail.com.
That's right. And if you would like to, for example, after today's podcast, let us know if you agree with what we're about to say. And we're going to say a whole lot of things, I think.
I believe so. This last week, a newer coworker asked me, hey, have you ever considered singing or radio? It seems like you got a voice for it. I'm like, okay, dude, I do sing in a band and I do a podcast. And guess what? I didn't tell him the title of either one. I'm like, you may think I have a good voice, but you haven't had to sit and listen to me talk for an hour and a half before.
This is just based off of good conversation, just like your baritone voice.
And passing conversation too. I feel like I have a lot of coworkers who think I'm good at interacting, but they haven't had to interact with me more than 10 minutes. Once you get past 10 minutes, it gets a little shaky.
Not a single person I know that doesn't know that I've played music or that I currently have a podcast. No one tells me I should do either of those two things. I've actually never been told
Well, I
to
mean,
do either of those two.
I've been carrying the load on this podcast. I mean, I acknowledge that.
I'm like the screeching cat in the background to your silky smooth radio DJ.
That's right, everybody.
Oh my God, it's
But
so good.
I can tell you this much. Colton's got a badass LA Dodgers hat on. I like it.
Oh yeah, it's my little dad hat I got
I
going on.
know. I see you can rock. I don't feel like I can rock a hat that like just settles at the top of your
Well,
scalp.
it's especially squashed because I got my headphones. I'm not gonna, this is for no one else. I was gonna show you my hat that I got last year from their spring training, that fitted cap. It looks very nice, but that is huge on my head, like humongous.
Well, do you have a big head? Because I have a
Oh, I
big
do.
head.
Yeah, what's your size? Do you know?
Let me grab one of mine real
Okay,
quick.
edit this out. We're getting our hats, everybody.
So this is how we're starting.
I can't imagine this beginning going any not the way we wanted it to.
Why
I
not?
got a 7 5/8. And here's the thing, 7.5 doesn't work for me, but 7 5/8,
I think that looks great.
it's loose, but I like it a little loose. I don't want it to, I don't
Yeah.
know.
No, that's a good hat. That's a good hat. I like it.
It's got the kind of trucker mesh in the back. These are the
Yeah.
spring training from last year. I loved these.
Yeah, I got a 7 3/4. So I got a bigger brain. We've established this now,
And the
carrying the
small
load.
likelihood that this actually makes the podcast. Listeners, tell us your hat size.
Please.
That would be, if we ever do get merch, I would want hats before t-shirts.
Same, but we're never getting merch.
That seems like an irresponsible thing for us to
Listeners,
do.
you have to spread the word if you want to see some hats because we have to feel like we can sell and make our profit back or make a profit off of it.
I just want a hat, so I have no other reason for this.
That would be
Oh
cool.
my God. Okay, we're starting this in a relatively upbeat mood, but can I say, I'm like this whole week, has been, and I talked to you about this over the last week.
Yes.
I just think there's never going to be any good music ever again. There's nothing.
I've lightened a little bit, but this is something I've learned through doing this podcast is you and I are basically, you know, the sky is falling at the beginning of the next swing to where it's like, okay, we got to do this episode for the podcast. But I've started coming around a little bit.
Well, the artist this week, as you all can tell, because you have eyeballs, you saw our description and the title of the episode. It's Say Anything. And I did this to us. And even at the same time, I'm going to, as I maybe might have done with a band like A Perfect Circle, there's going to be certain things I say on this podcast that are like the most superlative way I know how to compliment something. Because there are some things that I just think are extraordinary and singular. But that is outweighed by just a lot of, what do we call it, Rob? What is the word for what the rest of what happens is?
Arrogance.
It's hard
the
not
first word
to
that
argue,
pops into my head.
It's hard to argue against that.
Yeah.
It is. I at least hopefully, I guess, is another way to think of that. But
on the plus side, we actually bail before we get into the really bad stuff.
Oh, and by design, I'm the one who set the parameters for this, and I purposely left out some earlier material where some of that earlier stuff I actually like a lot more than what comes after is a real boy. But yeah. I also think some of that stuff is a little overrated.
Yeah, I never listened to baseball. I don't think I've listened to any of the EPs.
There's a few. I mean, when we officially start the categories, I can kind of give you at least my own journey. And a lot of it has to do with just my sister and other friends of ours finding bootlegs and things before any of those records were officially released in any real capacity.
So you were aware of them before they got huge, or before Is a Real Boy came out?
I would say so. Well, I mean, I met Max Bemis before they were really much of
That's
anything.
True. That's true.
And
you did.
Embarrassed myself and insulted him at the same time.
You want to get cozy, everybody?
Oh, I've told this story on the podcast before, so I don't know if people have heard it already, but I was at House of Blues with Nicole, and I'm trying to remember someone else who's at that show with us. It might have been maybe Chris. Actually, I'm pretty sure Chris was there.
Okay.
Chris, this is my sister and my, at the time, future brother-in-law, current sister's boyfriend. And we went to see My Chemical Romance at the House of Blues in Los Angeles, open for Face to Face. And this band opening for both of them was something we'd never heard of. And they had a small little merch table. And we had gotten there earlier. And this is, even at the time, this is not a nice thing to any band, doesn't matter. But I know I didn't mean it in a bad way, but I was breaking a kind of etiquette that I've since grown to realize, wow, not a nice thing to do. But I came up to that band and I was just curious when they were going to play. And I said, do you know what time you all are playing? And the man who was sitting behind the thing was Max Bemis, because the band would Say Anything. And he said, oh, I can't remember the time. And I didn't say it directly to his face, but I definitely was like, oh, we have time. And so I left right after. We left to get, because we hadn't eaten and we need to get food. Anywho, I still
so you
see
didn't
them.
Catch the set.
Oh, no, I did.
Okay, good.
We got
good
to
work.
See them, and they were great. And I remember after that, I didn't buy a record right away, but they, you know, were in Hot Topic. I think after that, that was the place in Lancaster to get,
of course,
smaller CDs.
Let's not make Hot Topic seem like it's just a Lancaster based.
No,
or
but
AV based.
Other thing. Places you would go to, like a record store, and in Lancaster, where would you get music that was like not super well known music?
Okay, yeah, I would probably give it to Hot Topic, even though Warehouse, I felt.
Warehouse.
Yeah, Warehouse.
What Warehouse are you talking about?
The place called Warehouse.
Why am I not thinking of this? It's not Circuit City. Where's Warehouse?
It was next to the AMPM on 15th Street West and Avenue K. All right, this might be cut.
This
might
be. I'm going to have to look this up later. I literally can't even think of what you're talking
Warehouse
about.
Warehouse Music. Now you're making me feel insane.
No,
Warehouse
is that the
Music.
One by Target off of on K, you said? In the same thing as where the Target is, kind of by where your house is?
You
but
know,
that closed down a long time ago.
It did. Well, it was right around the same time that, it was before. You know, everybody, this is basically, we're just trying to do some tourist attraction for Lancaster. Please come to
for
Lancaster.
30 years ago.
Check out our Target.
I think
the AM/PM is still there.
I'm not going to say anything about whether or not this should be cut because you'll instantly leave it in if I say something. Mm-hmm. Anywho, that is to say, my history with this band does go back to somewhat before they were huge, but they were at a time where I was going onto their website every day because that was the only time to really, actually hear from bands before social media.
Sure, sure.
And Max Bemis would go on AOL every now and then. And I remember going on AOL, messaging Max Bemis and saying, "Hey, I think you're amazing." And I think I said something along the lines of, "You really inspire me. I want to get out of this small town I'm in. And I'm really excited that you're doing the work you're doing." And he said something akin to, he replied, it was once, and it was like the biggest day of my life at the time. He said, "Really happy to hear that, but appreciate your small town."
And amen, Max Bemis. Best words you ever written.
But it's also kind of like, well, yeah. But then at the same time, it felt so profound. And looking back, I'm like, sure, okay.
he was probably listening to John Mellencamp at the time. We'll get back to Say Anything.
We have lots, but that's not the only reason why I'm so depressed. I'm also depressed because a lot of bands have released new music in the past couple of weeks. And it feels like it's 2006 again. Like Vampire Weekend's come out with new singles. MGMT has come out with new singles.
Yep.
And
Nora Jones.
Mother, as you said.
Yep.
And I'm not sure, like 3 out of 4 of those, I'm very underwhelmed by. I'm not making any huge decisions on anything. It's very early, but like that. Oh, so Vampire Weekend, I'll go ahead and start for our music of the week. What was your beat on Capricorn?
It sounded like they had a good time creating the music, but it just seemed aimless.
My problem with it is every new single I've heard from Vampire Weekend, like for their whatever their new record is, I felt like I've immediately had a sense of what their larger intention is with that album, right? What it is that it sounds like they're trying to do, like what new sound they're looking, and there always has felt like a new sound, but very much still in that vein of Vampire Weekend that I think both of us appreciate.
Yeah.
And so when Father of the Bride came out, and I can't remember which was the lead single. I want to say it was Harmony Hall, though.
If it is, that's their best song ever.
And that is an amazing song. And it was also so different from these earlier records, and it felt like some kind of progression. When I hear Capricorn, one is it really just sounds like a B-side to their very first record. They even have that, like, what is that, the harpsichord coming in. It's like, It feels like a kind of nod back to that record. And then they do that. I heard someone else describe it as like that wall of sound, right? That comes in.
Yeah.
But God, man, it just doesn't feel at all exciting.
It's not. And it's one of those, and I'm not trying to downplay it. It's still a good song. It's not trying to say that it's a horrific thing, but what's that quote to where it's like, it's really hard to be motivated when you wake up in silk sheets.
I've never heard, but I can get the meaning.
Yeah, and I'm probably botching the statement anyway. But yeah, it's just one of those, what is his drive to writing a song now?
I mean, I've always felt like with Ezra Koenig, there's like exercises in what he's doing. And I think he is suited to writing from what could feel like a place of privilege. I mean, we've talked about this before.
Yeah.
The illusion is that Vampire Weekend are these like trust fund kids, and that's not what they are, but that's definitely what they put out to the world. And Ezra Koenig, I think, has a really good eye for making that world still feel interesting. But this was,
the thing is, you're talking about like what he was writing about at one point in time, in which he was kind of addressing the illusion that they're, like you said, the trust fund kids.
Right.
This time around, it just sounds like a song written by somebody who's not uncomfortable.
Yeah, kind of the doddering wealthy person going through their mansion. Like, what do I do? Yeah,
it's the obligatory, we have to make a song.
The lyric that I've heard people kind of catch on to that I'm underwhelmed by is, "I know you're tired of trying. Listen, baby, you don't have to try." And it's
too many babies. Too many babies.
But also weirdly apt for I think Baby. I don't want to misquote him. But anywho, weirdly apt for the song, I think.
Yeah.
He feels maybe a little tired.
Yeah.
Anywho,
and
that's a
it's
bummer.
With how Vampire Weekend has hit us, it's what we've had in all these previous episodes, is there's just moments to where the artist is so locked in and where they're so not locked in.
Yeah.
It becomes a bummer.
And yeah, we'll see. I also am shocked that there's a lot of people who really seem to love it. And I think that's maybe because people actually do love it. And other times I think it is a weird, and we're going to talk about would say anything. The level of denial that some people who are like quote unquote fans of bands have, these are Weezer levels of denial where you want to be like, you could listen to just good music. It's not like a sports team where,
oh, of course. Well,
people like,
yeah, there's a little bit of that, you know. Ezra Koenig is such a genius that I think there are some people who just assume it will always be genius. And if they listen to the song and something's a little off, it's like you're listening to it going like, there's something I'm missing.
Right.
He clearly wrote a great song, but yeah. I just haven't realized what the greatness is on this.
Am I the one that hasn't grown?
Yeah.
And they're on some level that I just can't understand.
And here's the thing, listener. Colton and I have huge egos. So
we refuse to believe that's the case. How
if it's not good, if it's not good to me, it's not good.
Well, maybe you can save us from my spiral. Do you have a band to save us for this new single? Apocalypse?
Mother Mother did okay, but Mother Mother has not been that great to me since Touch Up. They just have like little blips of greatness. And it's when I say blips, I don't mean entire songs. And for my choice, I chose Explode.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think starts with a really cool rhythmic ordeal. Like when it comes in, I'm like, oh, that feels good. It's really nice. And they're like, I'll explode. And they do this little like heavy part. But they're really boring on choruses. They've been really boring on choruses for a while. And it is that repetitive, let me say this one line in as many different ways as I possibly can. It just dies out. It had such a great start, and then the chorus is just, we're a bunch of vocalists, and it sounds like they're having fun, but I don't know if that's that important to me anymore.
It's yeah, you and I off podcasts and also on podcasts have talked a lot about neither of us have ever been in that position of like writing records for there like might be pressure to write that record, to put it out, to basically support yourself, right?
Yeah,
where I
yeah.
think a lot of these bands, the option to take some years off isn't always there before you have to write another record, right? And that's with like any kind of artistic thing. I personally loathe like prompts to things, like write or do something for a particular theme or idea, or time crunches. It is
it's the
death
worst
to me artistically.
Yeah, it's a debate that I still have with my current bandmate. I mean, he's like, we got to finish this. I'm like, we don't have to finish this.
There's no
we can literally take our time. It's fine. And don't get me wrong, that has turned into 6 years. That can be the downside of it.
I do think there's something to be said about, you can hear in certain bands that we've talked about in the past, where it felt like it was just time to write a new record. And it wasn't let's create this singular thing. And to be honest, I think Say Anything is a great example where there's a record they've made that is, to me, so singular and unique and just feels like it's filled with so many ideas. And then there are records after that where just checking boxes, sometimes awful, awful boxes.
And also quoted as saying this is a little bit more of a accessible, more of a, I'm not necessarily in a mean way. They're trying to make money, you know,
well,
so they're trying to maintain a lifestyle that's going on. Whereas like if we're talking about Mother Mother, you know, compared to like Vampire Weekend, Vampire Weekend is also a band to where they've made a good amount of comfort.
Oh, I mean,
their
tour,
releases.
And even bigger than I remembered them being, their tour that they're selling tickets to now is insane. And I also think that like concert culture has gone amok. Like it's insane to me how much tickets are and how big everything is now. But I was surprised at like selling out huge arenas.
Yeah. Whereas Mother Mother, They're still a touring band. They probably have hotel rooms, but not, you know, luxury hotel rooms, probably motels, or it's like they are actually in that cycle of until they get the big hit. Have you ever heard Mother Mother on the radio? I haven't.
I mean, and I'm also not the guy to talk to. I don't really listen that's to fair. The radio, but fair. Like that's all. That's like a very like early 2000s boast. I don't listen to radio. No one cares anymore.
Yeah, but it's really just they haven't reached this particular echelon of success that I think that's what they're striving for. Right. So I think that's why out of all the newer artists to release something, I still get a sense of passion and drive. As opposed to that comfort element. Word of the day, everybody. Comfort. Word of the episode. Yeah, comfort. Yeah,
can we throw in a quick bonus, because we both listened to it, that we were both disappointed by the new Norah Jones single? I don't even remember it. Okay. That
made me sad. Really made me sad.
Norah Jones is great, but it was like, well. Anywho.
Something I did want to say about Mother Mother.
Please do.
It's one of the rare occasions to where nobody told me about the artist. I discovered them on my own. In the MySpace days. And I do remember reading their profile, and I thought it was beautiful because it had a positive review and it had a negative review of their music. And they were like, you know what? After reading all of this, we're really happy to be musicians and not critics. And I just couldn't help but think of that. You know what? You guys should try being both. It's kind of fun.
It's kind of fun. There you go. That's the
start
best part.
Podcast.
I will say, when you brought them up, because I hadn't listened to them in a while, I was shocked to hear they're still around, and that's cool.
Yeah, still going. I'm sure the band members have kind of changed, because that's kind of the inevitable for a band who's been around as long as them. But yeah, so everybody, go ahead, feel free to check out new music from old artists, and you tell us if they still got it.
Yeah, please email us and tell us that we're being overly negative, which I've never been accused of before.
Not at
it's
all.
It's impossible. Are you kidding me? Well, on that note, let's do this. Let's take a break, and then let's come back and have a really great, uplifting conversation.
Leo, let them know about Bassbone. We love it.
If you're looking for fun events, awesome music, and enjoyable podcasts, then look no further. The Bassbone Entertainment family has you covered. With so many talented people in our community, it was only right that we not only bring you events, but all sorts of awesome entertainment. Follow Bassbone on social media or join our Discord community to stay updated and engaged in everything. That is at Bassblown on social media and discord.gg/bassblown for our Discord. Bassbone Entertainment, bringing you more than just bass in your face.
You ready?
No. All right. Welcome back, everybody.
Welcome back. So we've already touched a little bit on at least my prior relationship with Say Anything. I'll have more, I'm sure, to say as we go forward. But I want to check in with you. Did you get Say Anything from me, or what was your kind of first introduction?
It was kind of our group of friends. Just Say Anything was kind of creeping in, and you know, I definitely heard a lot of people saying this album's incredible, but actually our bass player at the time, I don't know if we were sitting in front of McDonald's or something, just eating. He was like, I really love these guys. And he just threw on, what's the first track on Is a Real Boy?
Belt.
I was like, damn, this is really unique. And the big thing that popped to me, which ended off being a deterrent later on, was his voice.
Mm-hmm.
His voice was so unique for the genre they were playing that I just felt, oh man, okay, this is new. He's singing from like kind of a level of how I talk, to where in my mind, it's like, you got to be up here to be in that genre. You have to be a higher pitch voice. And his was just so, so chest voice.
It really is more, I don't know, the band I always think of is like Law Dispute, where it's that more almost spoken word, but not quite. Like there's melody in what he's doing, but it's also very like constant yelling. And when he does sing, I think like those like kind of more croonier moments he does, which are really more in like later records, don't come off super well. Like it's weird to think he's not a great singer.
It's funny you say that. At least on these three albums, there's three songs per each album to where it's a throwback vibe. You know, the like you got the all the words in my mouth. But it's just a nice little, it's a little throwback. It's an older style genre that he's kind of utilizing in a modern sense. And it happens again on the next two albums. I can't remember the titles of them off the top of my head.
That Is Why is, I think, from
That
Defense.
Is Why. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. And
Property is the other one on self-titled. Well, and I think initially, so here's, I guess, where to start. Mm-hmm. This is my, I'm going to say this right now. I'm going to give away basically half my categories. Max Bemis has only written one good album.
Sure.
That's it. He wrote Is a Real Boy.
Do we want to just get it out of the way?
Sure. Well, I think that's got to be obvious, right? It was released in 2004. And here's the thing.
3, 2, 1. Best album.
I don't think after that, he wrote one good song after Is a Real Boy. That is my, including Was a Real Boy, which I'm not including in Is a Real Boy. Like only in those, 13 tracks.
No, I consider
tracks.
Was a Real Boy a separate album in my head.
I do too, yeah. I don't think he's written a good song after that. I really don't. Like written songs where I'm like, and I've maybe been interested, but never one that I thought was actually good.
Well, and to me, it's a comparative thing where Is a Real Boy is so groundbreaking.
Yeah.
With all the bands we were listening to, how it impacted our group of friends, it was astonishing how good an album that was.
And influential in a way where, and I know we've had this discussion before, influential in that I don't now write songs like Max Bemis. I don't want to try to, and especially not now. But
sure,
it's not that. It was the approach that he took in that record.
Funny enough, yeah.
With just that every song one felt so different from all the others, but also lyrically and thematically, what it was that he was doing. That, again, like you say, that word groundbreaking, it makes a lot of sense. Because when Israel Boy comes out, the overall vibe, especially if you're someone growing up in a mainly suburban track home kind of a place, which we both did, devoid of really all any real culture. If you're interested in rock music at the time, with garage rock being the you know, that garage rock revival we talked about,
sure,
the idea was the bands that were playing that were getting the critical love and all that were these like too cool for school New York or LA bands that were imbued in that like hipster culture, which at the time wasn't a four-letter word. That was like the thing to strive to, but they were emotionally closed off. It was all about cool, like how cool you could be, how dissociated you could be from emotion. But that was also mixed in with those bands being quote unquote smart and intelligent. And what Max Bemis did that nobody that we knew, our friend had, what I didn't have, he was super smart, but he was also sick of that as a way to interact with culture. And so he wrote an album that gave more or less people like us someone to actually like sound like they were coming from our corner. Right.
I can see that, especially because he had his own mental issues, which he addressed so honestly throughout the album to where it makes it more gravitating. But the big thing for me when it comes, you know what, everybody, apparently we're just starting with best album.
Why not?
Whatever. We can switch it up. It's our podcast. It's so musical. And when I say musical, I don't necessarily mean instruments and all that. I mean like a musical. I can picture throughout the entire, and I know that that was his intention initially, was for it to be a rock opera.
Right.
And then the anxiety came in and he's just like, I'm just going to write it straightforward. But
thank God.
Yes. I think it would have really ruined it. But I can picture when I listen to it, I picture somebody walking through a city. Now, granted, I picture it like it's in a musical to where there's a couple of dancing and snapping fingers and spinning around telephone poles. That was such a cool element to me, to where I'm a fan of musicals. I think you are too, you know, and it was blending two different worlds of music that I didn't even think you could really blend.
I totally agree. And doing so in a way that didn't feel like it was taking away from either. Right. Yeah. Where there have been bands since then that have done what Say Anything did musically. Right. I think the one I always think of is like You, Me and Everyone We Know, that actually Max Bemis put out a quick song with, I think. But in that first record, those first three, really, right? Belt, mm-hmm. Woe, and then Alive with the Glory. I think Alive with the Glory of Love is the next one after that. Yeah. Oh, no, The Writhing South. Forget.
Yeah, The Writhing
South. But Alive with the Glory of Love, it's the fourth track. They all have that very, those kind of jazzy chords, right? That mm-hmm. Mixed in with the tempo, the rhythm of the strumming. But it's also, there's some really deeply heavy moments, especially, I think, later in the record, too. It's like a great, alive rock record.
And I think you nailed it with the way he sings. You said it's kind of almost spoken word. That kind of lends itself to the musical style. You know, I feel like there's another word I'm missing for musical, but Broadway.
It is very broad. I think that's a good way. It's hard to pin down, I think, from track to track, but I think that's the safest term to use.
Sure. But I mean, like, every single song has such dramatic mood swings in it. I don't know. I can see camera angles on when I'm listening to him. You know, I can just see how the cast would be around him. You know, it's where everybody stops dancing when he goes like, out of my body, up through the... When it hits that moment, it's such a standstill moment where I can see the spotlight coming in on him and the cast kind of moving away into the back.
And that really is just the power of, like, what the songwriting on that record is like. When mm-hmm. I was saying before, he's never written another, like... quote unquote, like, actually good song since then.
Mm-hmm.
That really feels like me insulting him. But we've said before, how hard is it to write one good song?
Yeah.
How hard is it to write basically 13 amazing songs in one record? And when I say that they only have this one record that I think is actually good, it is one of my favorite records of all time. And I would put it against any other band that was writing music within his, like, genre and generation at mm-hmm. the time. And since, it's better than anything they've ever done.
Yeah.
I can't think of one band that I would, put it against.
I can. But I don't want to say who it is because we had an episode on them in which we didn't do ratings. We didn't do categories, But it's that close. That's how much this album is just extraordinary for the time frame it came in.
Yeah,
it lasted. When listening to it over the last 2 weeks, every time listening to it, it was amazing.
I keep expecting to go back to it at one point in my life and for it to have lost some of that sheen. And it's opened new things, I think. Like, and here's the thing. Maybe the thing I was the most aware of is that lyrically, the thing about Max Bemis that I've come to realize is I used to think he was an amazing lyricist.
Mm-hmm. He once was called the new Bob Dylan.
He was called the new Bob Dylan, which is funny because I remember he got an interview, I think in Alternative Press, where they asked him about that. And he said, I'm ignoring that. He's like, I feel like Conor Oberst got that title and then he leaned too hard into it and it was embarrassing. And when I, thinking back to that time, I'm thinking that was a paraphrase. He did something along those lines, said. I can't remember if he said it was embarrassing, but he did say he thought that Conor Oberst embraced that too readily.
Too much, yeah.
And looking back to it now, I'm like, well, I think Conor Oberst won that.
Yep. I probably agree.
But that, looking to it now, do I think he's an amazing lyricist? Maybe, maybe not. Because there are times, like you mentioned, I think the bridge to Woe is mm-hmm. one of the most emotionally moving things I've ever heard.
Yeah.
And it's because the Say Anything ethos in that record is not trying to be overly complex. There's so much intelligence in that record, but it's also having the courage to say things that are so cheesy that he makes mm-hmm. them profound. And he knows the self-awareness that they're cheesy in that record is so important. So when he says, "It is hard when all you want to be is in a dream."
Yeah.
That is Cornball 101. But when he says it the way he says it, and when it's built up in that moment, it's just perfect.
It's theatric. You know?
Exactly.
It's just on a bigger level. Whereas later on certain albums, when he tries to pull off the same corny cliche lines, it's not hitting the right way. And it's a fine line. It's a very delicate little area to where you can make it land or make it, or it just falls apart. Bravo to him for having the bravery, but there are also some moments where, like, I didn't realize how smug his voice can sound.
It gets, and when you said before arrogance, I think that is, yeah, man. Well, I mean, we're about to dive into it, but let's do this. We've
got best album out of the way. Yeah.
You want to, let's do a little mix and match. Let's go to worst song before we get to best song. Okay. Cause we're talking about arrogance. We might as well. I can take it.
Go ahead.
There's so much, but Crushed is the one that makes me so upset.
What? Who's he writing it for? It's one of those.
His wife.
No. I get he's writing it for his wife, but when it's released, that's what makes the album so confusing to me, to where there are these moments to where he has this silliness, to where he's just going like, oh, come on. Like, I'm just writing a song. It's clearly goofy lyrics, but that doesn't make it good because you're intentionally using such corny lyrics.
And let's be honest, awful lyrics. Yeah. That record is filled with lyrics where I think
you used the term earlier this week, not in the episode, but insulting.
I'm looking at the lyrics now. I'm getting physically upset.
I can see it. When his face is a little flush, everybody.
Here's the thing. I knew it was bad because he says, when I was 8 years old before puberty took hold. That took hold bullshit, like, it's so bad. There are awful things on this song, but don't rhyme old with hold. It's so dumb. Because the thing is, what he wants is the puberty thing. That's what he wants to throw in. The took hold is a sort of an excuse to get puberty in there. Because Max Bemis has grown to be about the grotesque and weird ways. Like, he's just like... It's like this weird, like so many of his songs later in their band's career get sticky. Mm-hmm. In like that gross sticky way that I'm like, I don't want anywhere near what's going on. And I don't know. What else? Oh God. You're like Bjork with better fashion sense.
Yeah, that one's terrible.
You're an art, respect to your work. You're an artist. I'm a silly jerk. And then I have a total crush on you.
I have a total
I want to keep going because there's so many bad ones.
I just brought up the lyrics and I put my phone down. Nobody can. When I said Colton looked physically distressed, now I do. I'm rubbing my eye. My hair is elegantly disheveled.
And up until that point, like Max Bemis has written songs. Like there's two I can think of right off the bat that most people who know Say Anything would mention as like the kind of classic Say Anything love songs. There's A Walk Through Hell.
Mm-hmm.
And I Want to Know Your Plans.
Yeah.
I Want to Know Your Plans to me is just, yeah. I mean, it's one of the first songs I remember learning all the way through on guitar and really being able to perform.
I really thought of you anytime that song came on and Walk Through Hell, just because you've written more love songs than I have, you know, and not necessarily trying. I don't mean that
I feel attacked. I know what you mean. It's a very hard genre to write.
It's
well.
Very difficult. Every time I've listened to those two songs, it's beautiful. I always think I'm gonna come after it. Just, no, this part is dumb. This part's not. No, it always executes really well. It has an emotional flavor to it. And lyrically, it's not as insulting as I have a total crush on you. And it's just like his wife
had. I can't believe it.
His wife had to go like, that's lovely, sweetie. But just leave that for me. You don't need
just
to
record
put it on the
that.
Album.
Leave it. Yeah. Leave it in a gift basket for our anniversary.
I'll
no
listen
one has
to
it
every February 14th. It'll be our thing.
Subjectivity in art is always a thing. But here's, I have to say this. If you're a human being that listened to Crushed and you didn't immediately feel just like those negative feelings you're feeling when you hear a song like that, it's because it's not a good song. And that's okay to feel that way. It's an objectively, can I say this? It's objectively awful.
I got your back.
Okay.
I
love you, man. Sorry.
I got a total crush on you, Colton, right
it's
now.
So over bad. Here. I can't believe that song exists. Okay.
I know. It's, well, I'll actually lighten the mood with my worst song.
Mild Manorexia. Sorry. He said that also in the song. Please go.
Mine shouldn't be a surprise. Every man has a Molly. I have one and keep my motherfucking sister's name.
Oh, come
out of
on.
Your motherfucking
come
mouth.
On.
You should not be surprised. I had always, and don't, okay. I didn't always feel the song was bad, but I also have a terrible memory with the song to where I actually learned how to play it and we played it at a live show. in which I forgot the lyrics. It's one of the most embarrassing moments of my life. So just
so are you saying that because it's tied to that moment?
That's one of the things. I also don't think on the album, I don't think it's that great a song compared to the rest. There's not like this unbelievable chorus that kicks in. And it's also a little pervy.
But worst song of.
Yeah.
That's insane. He worst of all the other songs that we've heard.
He could have chose.
I'm going to name every other track on Say Anything, the self-title.
He could have chosen.
I need you to start taking this seriously. This is insane.
I am taking this seriously. I love my sister.
Hate Everyone
Do not talk
is
about...
better than Molly.
Yeah.
Do Better is better than Molly.
That's in one of my categories.
Eloise. It better not be. Eloise is better than Molly.
Eloise is similar to Molly.
Crushed is better than Molly.
Well, you already chose it.
Death for My Birthday, Young, Dumb, and Stung. She won't
Death
follow you.
Death for My Birthday
you.
Is really bad.
Amen. Oh, should we go to In Defense of the Genre? Die to Jew is better than Molly.
Yes. I actually think the verse melodies are really good.
I think this is the most mad I've ever been at you.
I don't care, man.
Like, remember that time you spilled soda in my backseat and I got really mad? My Jeep Cherokee?
I don't care. You should have saw this coming. I've always had an issue with using the name Molly, and it's real cool.
I know it's not real. This is your gaslighting thing. This is insane. This episode has lost any legitimacy. And this is not me being like, Molly's such a great song. It's just, look at all the things we had to work with, and you chose Molly.
Come on, man. Like, we're putting on a performance here. Fine, I'll choose a different one. Even
no,
though...
no, you picked
no,
your bed.
I picked my bed.
You picked it. You made it. You made your bed.
I chose this. What is this, Goldilocks?
You picked your porridge.
Whatever, man. You should have saw this coming.
I see it. Okay, best song. Let's do best song.
Okay.
Just to have a thing.
This is the one that I wanted you to go first on. I should have opened up the worst song.
You should have. Okay. This one was hard for me. Because there's a couple, and like it's always one of those things where I have to go through what my favorites are. Woe will always be my favorite. Woe is always going to be my favorite because it's the first one I heard from them where I felt, well, it's one of the first I heard, period. But also, all the things they do in that song, like all the different versions of Say Anything They Become, and like there's the kind of musical Broadway-esque, there's like the really like open synth in the bridge, which the bridge is just... amazing. It's so good. Yeah. But if I'm picking what I feel like is maybe the most tight, best, I think maybe it's The Feudal. The Feudal is really good.
I definitely think it's so good. The chorus is an extraordinary chorus for a book.
Well, and then the rat poison for dinner, kind of post-chorus that they do later after that.
And that song is actually, it's shorter than I would expect it to be.
I think it's like them in the pocket. Like it is like fast. He's like funny. He's biting. He's like, you know, what do the old people teach us except how to die?
I'm going to take a little bit of offense to it.
What do your hissy fits teach you except how to cry, pussy cry? Like it's funny. It's self-aware.
Yeah.
And there's moments where it's like actually, I don't know. There's like some cool kind of poetic twists to it. Belt is also up there, but
Belt is extraordinary. It's a great opener. And I mean, I do love the little dialogue at the very beginning of it too.
It all works nicely. It's one of the better openers I could think of. But in the grand tradition of me picking for best song, not my favorite song, but what I try objectively to think is best, I'll go with The Feudal.
Okay.
There we go.
Oh, shit. All right. Then I'll do a similar thing. To me, my favorite song by them, and I don't think anybody else would have this in their category, Yellow Cat / Red Cat. I've always loved that song. I love how much the music complements the lyrics. I know this might be shocking for the listener to hear me talking about lyrics, but the fact that it is just such a dullness to life that he's talking about it, and just when it hits him, it's so calming. It's just like, okay, I feel like nice. It still feels like that walk in, that walk while singing. But just when he starts with the lyrics and just he's talking about cats. He's kind of like, you're just cats. And then also I do get this impression there somewhere deep inside of Max Femmes, he does not like hip hop.
But I also know that he fronts to say that's not true, because I think in a later record he said he's more influenced by rap at this point than rock, which who's to sure. say? But
it's fine. Yeah. but yeah, that song is that's my personal favorite. I just love how relaxing it is and how it grows and how it expands upon this idea of existentiality amongst your friends. And but I would say the best song is probably "Child Like I Shall Grow."
Chill Like a Shell Grow is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, that song, it's a doozy of a song. I listened to that again today. Just,
man. I'm not mad at you anymore, because that was almost my pick too.
Cool.
Okay.
I'm still mad at you. But I mean,
I'm a little, like, thinking back to what you said, I'm a little, now I'm like getting back to you. It's so good though.
Oh, man.
I shall grow and grow.
What you just brought up is the end of the song, and there's so much great things that happen throughout it. It's a clever time signature, or maybe not time signature, rhythmic usage within
and that's also, I mean, Max Bemis as guitarist is interesting. I don't think he's like amazing.
Clever.
He can be clever for sure.
Yeah. But yeah,
I want you all succeed. The highest marks and greed.
Ah, man, that's such a good song. That's probably their best song to me, but it's not my favorite.
It is definitely like we've done in the past, where best song seems to represent the band as it's meant to be working.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go ahead and see that. I think yours is more of that, because as much as The Feudal is about like the more kind of like sarcastic biting Max Bemis, the more true version is these like grand sweeping things. And
yeah,
I Shall Grow is one of those like not very impressive lyrical things on paper, but
sure.
Also that it's at the end of the record and it's this like what the guitars are doing. Kobe Linder, I think, is a great, great drummer for this band in particular. He's really great. And he's so good on that song too. Good choice.
Yeah, yeah.
You all win. Right. You win the category.
Hey, this is a competition. This is a competition, everybody.
I won the category before. I am keeping track.
Hey, but there you go.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
How much you loved my favorite song.
That
or
you're
the best
willing
song,
that you're much... willing to die on a bit is the thing that I'm just like.
It's not a bit, man. This has been my life. You act like I haven't done it. Okay, maybe I'm being Andy Kaufman, but this isn't a bit that's just for this podcast.
Can
this is my lifelong bit.
One experiment. Will you humor me with the thought experiment?
Of course.
Okay, that song is... You're mistaken. That song is called "Every Man Has a Holly."
No, yeah, it's good too.
Your worst song for saying anything now still
has some gross lyrics on it, and it's also he's like accusing you.
My
goddamn
theory
kids
is that
better be gracious with the merch money you spend.
It's hilarious
because
for you all never.
Yeah, yeah, it's not. That's fucking. That's a precursor to the Max Bemis we get to know later on.
So you're saying that's what starts it. That song is what's... I mean, the whole conceit of that song, the whole conceit of the record is this guy suddenly becomes this, like, something awakens in him and he can't stop singing about anything that comes to mind, like, bearing everything about his life. Like, that's, like, the whole thing, right? Funny enough, though, that ends up what happens to Max Bemis.
You know what? Why are we going back to this? You already said you're not mad at me.
It's worth it. Because we're about to talk about all these other songs.
You're
going to
get
so
mad
awful.
At me. You're going to get so mad
and
at me.
And here's the thing about it that makes me sick.
All right.
Is I know for the fact the only reason you're bringing up Is a Real Boy songs for these categories is because you couldn't listen to those other records because you knew they were so bad.
I only listened to them twice. Honestly, in defense of the genre, I don't think twice is all the way through. Twice.
Hey, what do we got next, everyone? Do you hear everyone what he's done to me already? Underrated.
Can I remind you, Colton? You didn't prepare for this episode. At the end of last episode,
I've been preparing my entire life for this episode.
But you didn't give me enough time to prepare.
That's fair. Is it fair? I don't know. Underrated.
It's not fair at all. Yeah.
You go first.
Underrated.
It's unbelievable.
Little Girls. I love that song.
That's fine. I mean, I knew you were going to choose something like that. That's fine. I'm not like...
I like it because it's got like kind of the punky element. But it's just funny to me how what I was saying about Molly, where I'm like, oh, he's like totally...
Yeah,
like,
totes in a probes, right, Rob?
Totes in a probes. And then I'm like, Little Girls, which the very first line is, I kill little girls. But I like that song just because nobody else has really fully agreed with me on it. I'm like, I thought that I loved Was a Real Boy. I learned that, no, I don't love Was a Real Boy. But it's because of that song. It's so damn good. And it's so, it's a lot more subdued than anything on Is a Real Boy. It's not as like grand, it's not over the top, but just when it hits that chorus of don't you come near me, don't you come close to me, I'm like, I don't know what he's even trying to say, but it feels good. It feels punkish.
It's very, there's a couple of tracks Say Anything is done, a lot of them are earlier ones where they're really more straight up pop punk band, and I think the last great punk rock song is another one. I don't know if you've heard that one, but that's very similar in terms of the vibe, right? And I think Little Girls, one, to me, it's just like a disavowal of like the like heartthrob lead singer mentality.
Yeah.
And like telling people to stay away from that idea of it. But I agree. Like, I think it is, I think it's a perfect underrated because it is definitely not their most musically exciting track. But I think that that pop punk version of Say Anything, I've always thought was pretty good. I agree with you.
I think it's really fun. And just like I said, I haven't heard anybody talk about it. So fudge it. I brought it in.
Fudge McFudge.
And I do actually think Was a Real Boy is something that we're not going to discuss much anyway.
Maybe. I have some words. But
okay. I mean, you have plenty of words just regardless.
This is good. This awakened something in me. I feel very alert. I feel like colors are brighter somehow. I think for me, underrated in the truest sense of the word for me, going back to In Defense of the Genre, and I don't have, it doesn't fall under really any other categories I can think of for me, but I do know I was at the time, I really loved In Defense of the Genre when it came out. I think it's because I just wanted more of Say Anything. And
there was definitely this big expectation. This was going to be an eventful moment. Like the new Say Anything is coming out. If they can be better than this previous one, oh my God.
Yeah. And when it's your favorite band or close to your favorite band and you hear it's going to be 27 new songs, you're just like, yes, please, let's do this. And I think.
I don't know if I had that same excitement.
I was
27
naive.
Tracks.
I was naive at the time. And listening back to it, I mentioned this to you before. The thing that bums me out about that record is that it's a series of ideas for songs. And even the good ideas don't really feel realized. And the only track where I listened to it again and thought, you know, I loved it before, and it actually is the one that comes to the top, is Have At Thee. And there's still moments on Have At Thee that I think, oh, I wish you hadn't done that. Like kind of weird things.
You had to choose a song from later in the album. All right, let's let it play for a moment here.
Drives me insane, drives me insane. That false Christ, drives me insane, drives me insane. That false Christ, God damn you! She'll never let me down again. So I'll go out and get crunk with my friends. My own brand.
I can give the crunk with my friends line a little bit of okay, that does sound like it could be on Is a Real Boy.
I think the thing is, there's not any one track on In Defense of the Genre that is free of him saying something where you think, why'd you say that? You could have said anything else. Get drunk with your friends is fine. But
no, he's got a crunk, man.
I just think it somehow survives a lot of that, what time has wrought to that record overall. And again, I'm picking underrated where I think maybe not the best song or good song, but I underrated it maybe. So there you go.
It does remind me of Rock the Casbah. Rock the Casbah.
Hearing it like it. Oh man. All right. So
that's an underrated song. That's the true underrated song on this podcast.
Overrated. I actually have a couple that I could name. One for me is the entirety of Was a Real Boy. Because
All right.
I think what you say that it's not talked about enough, I actually feel the opposite. Because in my experience, what people tend to do is they lump
they
was
associate
a real
the
boy
two.
With yeah. is, which yeah. I think is, I don't understand that. Like, unless it's just out of convenience, like if you're going to buy them both at the same time.
I viewed it as a double album for sure, but over the years I haven't. But didn't they release Is a Real Boy like a few years before, and then they signed to a label and then they re-released it?
Yeah, well, because Was a Real Boy was intended to be a separate release. I think it was meant to be like a
charity
album.
Yeah.
Say Anything versus AIDS, I think. And then they decided to release it, yeah, after Is a Real Boy was so successful. So it's not meant to be linked with Is a Real Boy.
But for the sake of what this category is, you can't choose an entire album.
Well, the two that come to mind to me are
Now
Wow,
I'm
I Can Get Sexual 2. I know, don't even start with me. Wow, I Can Get Sexual 2 works for that. But also yeah. Admit It. Kind of Admit It.
That's a good choice.
But I have to give the edge to Wow, because Admit It at the time really did feel like a thing. Like it really was kind of a primal scream for people who were sick of like what hipster culture had become.
Well, to be fair, Max Bemis is, if he listens to this podcast, he's going to send us that song.
That's fair. Don't send us the sequel. Just don't send us the sequel. Admit It Again. Which happened. That was the thing.
It did really occur. But when I would listen to it, I was just like, this would be his response to Colton and I talking about his.
I think the thing to me is it the same. We just talked about this with Face in New York, where me and my friends, like at the time, I thought it was this extraordinary work of art. And listening to it now in 2024, I'm 35. I'm like, a little cringy. And I think Admit It kind of similar, but it so perfectly captures a moment in time. Wow, I Can Get Sexual too is them trying to be this like tongue-in-cheek pop ripoff, and listening to it now, I think, well, none of it's good. It's all terrible.
Well, my selection is, obviously you knew Dida Jew was going to be close for me, but in the long haul, I've kind of warmed up a little bit more to that song. It's just the first lyric that really, really makes me dislike the song, just because I think it's tone deaf, ahead of its time tone deaf.
Yeah.
But in the long haul, I'm like, okay, I do understand most of the song is just, you know, him just dealing with the persecution he feels for being a Jewish man.
Yeah.
And so it's still not a great song. I think the verse. Yeah. The verse. I think the verse melody is actually really good. And I do like the opener, and that like bam, dum, bam, dum, bam, 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 bam. I think it's kind of fun. But I think the most overrated song is I Hate Everyone, because I remember a lot of people playing that in our group of friends. This is great. And I'm like, first of all, it's I Fought the Law and the Law Won.
It is.
It's immediately.
Even
that.
At the time, I feel like people were recognizing that. But I give that to you.
And the chorus is just great. Wonderful. I hate everyone. And the fact, I think that was like the first like radio successful song for them.
It might have been. I mean, they definitely at that point had reached what I think would be their peak in terms of popularity. I don't think they were gonna. I think it was more or less downhill from there. I think that's a really good choice, actually. I love your picks.
I'm getting some brownie minus points here. Minus the one, but I'm just.
It's a great example of what we were talking about, that peak totally fooling yourself, right? The deception, the self-deception that comes from liking a band and saying, I love this band. I'm going to listen to everything they put out. I just feel like it's not a healthy way to be a person. No, I do really like that one. Overrated is hard because at some point I stopped expecting anything good. And so I couldn't overrate anything at all.
Well, it did turn into something you said during the Weezer album or the Weezer episode where you're like, I checked out at one point. I totally checked out at one point. I should listen to this album again. It's like, no, I'm not going to. And that's why Every Man Has a Molly just pisses me off.
Because it's the one record you listen to the most that you understand. I've wrapped my mind around why it's that one. I kind of get it still. I almost want to force you to listen to those other records for an extra week. And we'll have an addendum.
Oh, hell no. I've told you before, when we finish the episode, I'm not listening to it for a while.
So we've discussed best album, but I want to give you a chance. Is there anything else you wanted to add to Is a Real Boy?
No, actually, I feel like I covered a lot of my bases.
I'm trying to think if there's anything. I want to look at the track listing again, just in case I don't get to watch it.
I'll do that right alongside you.
I think there are, in the latter half, like the songs we haven't talked about that I, An Orgy of Critics is really good. Like there's like a math metal side to Say Anything that like, that when they get heavy, it doesn't feel like them putting something on. It feels like actually musically cool.
Yeah, and I think he would have had a tough time trying, or they would have had a tough time creating that for the follow-up albums. But just the energy of it, and again, it's the musical journey and how theatric it is, you know, because it does start with such an aggressive tone, and then remind me, how's the chorus go?
It brought me to my knees. Your artist brought me to your knees.
Yeah, tour. It comes from this like really aggressive place. When you brought me, and this great shuffle beat going with it. You know, it's such a cool music journey. And again, it's that fine line to where they hit it. They found a way to land this song, whereas they tried to do it again later on. And it's really no offense, but it's what you said before. It's really hard to do, but just later on it. It didn't land, at least for me.
And I think there's a... Yeah, we talked... Maybe we should get this out now, because we're about to talk about worst albums for both of us, which I think are maybe different, which is good. I'm glad, actually. Maybe. I think we're both alluding to an interview that Max Bemis did. It was, I think, in between Is a Real Boy and Defense of the Genre. I could be wrong, but I'm almost certain. Where he said something to the effect of, I figured out songwriting at this point. I can write a good song, and it's like it very easily. And it also had very capitalist intentions behind it, because he was opening his song shop, which even at the time, like thinking, oh, one of my favorite songwriters is opening a song shop. I thought, what an awful idea. And since then, that's been, I think, a very controversial thing, because he's like not written songs for people who have bought songs. I don't know. Anywho.
Yeah, that's terrible. But I mean, definitely when you were the one who informed me of that little tidbit of an interview, right away, I was just like, so that means the songs you're writing are unnecessary. That proves even more to me that you're not focusing on writing a song out of necessity. You're writing a song or not what's the word I'm looking for? Well, out of necessity, like something is inspiring you to write the song, as opposed to you reaching this point and just going, oh, you need a song? I got you. Here's Baby Girl, I'm a Blur.
and it's very, and again, I feel like they're almost sister bands, because you have to bring up Weezer, because Rivers Cuomo talked about how he like writes songs with spreadsheets.
Yeah.
And funny enough,
sounds
those
like
are those. It does. And it sounds really sad and bad. I think the thing with Max Bemis too, to go to what you said with how arrogant those later records feel, it's like he keeps trying to like hold back parts of himself to that. Say Anything, the self-titled, is the last like full band record where it feels like he allows everything to happen. After that, they do what Anarchy is, where he says no more electric guitars, no more distortion, only cleaner acoustic. And then it's Hebrews, and he goes, no guitars, just keyboards. And
he finally got to work with his idol on Hebrews with Tom DeLonge. It's like, no guitars with your idol. Who's guitarist?
And then after that, the I Don't Think It Is, which I think is so bad in so many ways. The production is just grungy and awful. And then with Oliver Appropriate, it's just a full acoustic record. So he'll never allow himself the chance to write a song, like an actual song. It'll always be one hand tied behind his back.
Yeah.
And it's just like the biggest hubris is like, man, writing a song is really hard. And you're not nailing it.
Well, and that's the thing. I agree. You and I could just write a song right now. Yeah. I could pick up the guitar and write a song really quick. But does that mean it's worth it?
Yeah. That's
the that's the dangerous territory behind that. Where it's like you gotta know when it's not supposed to be really a song that you put on an album. And should we just get into it? We want to try a countdown here.
Yeah. Worst album, 3, 2, 1.
Say anything. It is okay. Say Anything. It is, because just at that point, well, first of all, I couldn't get through it 3 times. So that's kind of damning. And I do, personally, I'm actually very surprised that I like more of In Defense of the Genre than you do.
It's just sheer numbers. Yeah. Out of 27 songs, you're going to find stuff you
it's
like.
It's the odds, yeah.
You have odds that you're going to find something. We didn't get to talk about it. I wanted to ask you this question anyway, before we dive too deep, because I don't want to talk too much about Say Anything, self-titled. It's sad. What is your favorite cameo on In Defense of the Genre?
It's probably, I can't remember the song title.
Can we do 3, 2, 1?
Well, I don't think I remember the song title, but I
but
can
do you
say
remember that. The name that's of the person?
Yeah.
Okay. 3, 2, 1.
Haley
Gerard
Williams.
Way. Ugh.
I like that song.
That's awful song, but also what?
I like that song. I like that song. What's the name of the song?
Church Channel.
What's it called?
Church Channel.
Yeah, it is Church Channel. Yeah, mine's Church Channel. It has that little like that little Daft Punk like kind of like keyboard part there. I just I liked it.
Man, Gerard Way is my favorite because that is, it's like,
it feels like it was literally just for Gerard Way to come in. Like the music shifts so dramatically, where it's like, here you go, Gerard Way.
Oh, we have a Chemical Romance song.
Lyrically, he does a great job in his cameo. Yeah, sure.
And I don't know if he wrote that or if that is Max Bemis, but it makes me think Max Bemis should write for Gerard Way. Like,
to be fair,
a lot of
and
fun.
Possibly vice versa. They both have a very similar approach to a certain extent, like with the shouting spoken word vibe.
Yeah. Both of those. And on the whole, though, I feel like they shouldn't have had all those people.
That was one of the things that I was going to use if I would have chosen this as the worst album. It feels like it's so, the fact that many artists were on this album, I'm like, how much money do you have, first of all, Say Anything? How much money is being put into you being the next big thing? And that's where I think a lot of it falls off as well once we hit In Defense of the Genre. To where we're running into this, it's like it feels like there's a lot of people in a in a business sense that are really trying to support this act.
I think these cameos were likely more casual than that. I really do. But how is it that many?
And
well,
it was just
you're on
casual.
Warped Tour or something. I think it's
a lot, man. But the album before was so damn good that maybe it was a lot of people going like, yeah, I want to be part of this next big thing.
That could be
an element.
I am, even though self-titled, I do still think is the worst of these ones. And trust me, people, if we were doing all, it wouldn't be any of these.
No,
it would
these
be,
three would be, we would love them. We'd be
we're
saying
at the
some
top
great
of the
things.
Mountain.
Yeah.
And that's not even to say they're good, but I think In Defense of the Genre, this was that when I listening back to it, this was the one I was the most crestfallen to find I didn't like, because like I said, when Israel Boy is so perfect in the 13 tracks he allows it to be, ever since then, he's always done something to ensure that he never writes another record that has a chance to be as good. So instead of trying to take 27 ideas and craft 12 or whatever, you know, tracks out of that, 15 even, he says, no, I'm going to have all 27 out there, and most of them don't need to be there in like a really obvious way. I don't know.
No. It was really heartbreaking because, as we said before, this was a moment in time where there was so much buildup. And it's weird to say so much buildup because it's not like In Defense of the Genre came out that much later, or it didn't take years and years to come out. But you just felt like this band has it. They have this it factor. And then that came out and I was underwhelmed almost immediately. I think I was one of the few. Because when you say, didn't you say that you were kind of...
Oh, I think I was probably way more enthusiastic. I knew I didn't like it as much as Israel Boy, but...
Yeah.
And they were definitely, even at the time, I was thinking, well, I wish they didn't have all these songs. But see it as the failure I see it as now, that took time. That took years and years.
This was a rare one to where I kind of immediately was like, I don't know, man. Fair Inoculum reminds me a lot of this album.
What
the only
say
song
about,
he listened to off the album.
What do we say about self-titled that you wanted?
Maybe I want to say this could potentially be cut out, but you know who turned down an opportunity to be on In Defense of the Genre?
Who was it?
Jesse Lacey.
That makes sense. That tracks.
Well, and it tracks. It's small evidence towards something that I've hypothesized. Was him trying to get out of the genres or getting out of that genre, going like, I don't want to be part of this scene anymore.
And that just does not sound like something that he would want to do it anyway.
Yeah.
But I found that fascinating because I read it on the Wikipedia and I was like, oh, they were trying to get people. So the invitation was put out there for a lot of people. It was a grand
statement of like emo, you know. Yeah. I agree with you on that. When I look at the track listing for self-titled, can I say, do better? This is the only thing I want to say about it. Because if I could go track to track, I think it's all bad.
Mm-hmm.
Like really bad. But I think do better makes me so upset because there's a whole verse where when you think about what he's saying, he's talking about like farting. And he does it in a way where it's so, that term insulting.
Yeah.
It is.
I agree that it's a bad song. I don't think it's so bad, but I do think it's a bad song. But it's got promise to it. That's the part that kind of bums me out. It's like, yeah, it feels force-fed, or not force-fed, but like forcefully made. When it hits the chorus, I think that's actually, it's right on the brink of being a really good hook for a chorus.
He'd be the greatest man in the world, greatest band in the world.
That falls apart for me. It's like, I like the, you can do better, you can do better, and you could be the greatest man in the world. And I'm like, okay. I know that he said that, you know, behind every front man is this desire to change the world. But
which is insane.
I mean, I agree with it. Like, not necessarily that's what you think will occur, but it's kind of what your intentions are, is to like kind of leave a good mark.
I don't know and I think to me, maybe that's why this record fails so badly, is this is where Max Bemis, and I remember this in interviews, when they were interviewing for self-titled, what he was saying and how he was presenting himself, it was like, I've figured life out. I've figured out how to be a good person. And so much of this record comes from that space. And he does something that I hate. And he does it also on In Defense of the Genre. Funny enough, he does not do it on Is a Real Boy, where like when he's talking to women, he's talking in a prescriptive, like, your behavior is awful and I know how to fix you. And why won't you listen to me? And he does it in this record multiple times, in Defense of the Genre, like Skinny Mean Man, where I can think parts of that song are okay. The whole idea of it comes off as really kind of icky. Because he's like, why are you making these mistakes? I know what you should be doing. And it's the worst to me kind of misogyny that also just makes for boring songs.
I can't really argue on that. But he has plenty of songs like that, to where I think he's trying to go from a more sarcastic or ironic approach, to where it's like, that's not me. But we've been fooled before in the past, and so I get a little nervous. Maybe that is you. Maybe there is more of you in the person you're trying to play this character of and say, this is a bad person, but it's not me. There could be, but I don't know. I don't know for sure.
I just wish he would have gone back to introspection. Like, and people can say there are tracks on this record, self-titled, that are introspective. I don't believe you. I think it is. I don't want to believe it. No, well... And who's to say, I guess, but I don't really, because I think it's so much more prescriptive than it is reflective.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and you having that quote where he says every front man wants to change the world. I guess the reason I don't agree with that is the front man I can think of who I think might have that mentality, I think are bad songwriters. Maybe good front men, but their songwriting is shit. Because the only thing I could think of with songwriting is how to mine yourself and find some way to say something true in a way that you think is true. And I think with Is a Real Boy, he is doing that to the first degree. And ever since then, it's so weird how much it's like Weezer. It feels like he puts this wall up after that.
It's funny you say that, because now I'm kind of getting the impression, because it does feel like more when you listen to Is a Real Boy, there's a little bit more of a growth factor to what his lyrics are saying. Whereas, in the next two, it does sound more like he's coming from a place where it's like, I've grown now. I've officially reached this platform. So now I can tell you guys what it should be. And I think you brought it up with interviews. I didn't end off checking out any interview, but there are just some times where he seems culty.
The uniforms, the whole like, I can find a way to live your life better than you. Yeah, very cult-like. And not the cool cult.
not a fun one.
Not the Polyphonic Spree cult, which is super fun.
But I mean, but I can see it. Yeah, I do. Again, arrogance. But they're just kind of, that really started to shine through. And who knows what's really going on in his life. I don't want to try to put too much on him or be too evil, but you know, that's the kind of the nature of this podcast, everybody. We're gonna critique the hell out of your music.
It's just a, I'm just going down the list. Young, Dumb, and Stung. Oh my Lord. So
I'm proud of him on that song. I'm really surprised he didn't finish that statement the way you would imagine that statement finished.
Oh, he will. He'll go on too. Like, not in this record, but in others.
Oh, he does finish it off with Young Dung and...
Well, I mean, to an effect, he'll
amazed he didn't say that in the song.
I think he was instructed not to.
Somebody in the band was just like, dude, don't.
Sat him down.
please, you're already teetering.
So where do we end this? I guess do you have anything else to say about this record?
I don't have much else to say about Say Anything.
Not
the record, the band, I meant.
We'll take our break. We'll come back. We'll do our ratings, and then you have an announcement for me. But let's do a break first. Leo, take it away.
Announcement's a little extreme.
When it comes to making the goings-on of the world entertaining, we got you covered. The Chit Show is a news, pop culture, geek culture, and music podcast hosted by none other than Danny, a.k.a. Danko, and me, Leo, a.k.a. DJ Brute. Tune in as we cover all sorts of topics with a very opinionated and wild twist. The Chit Show Podcast, where chit chat and shit shows come together for your entertainment. Tune in on your favorite streaming platforms with new episodes dropping every other Monday. Again, that's The Chit Show, a Baseblown Entertainment podcast.
All right.
All right, we are back, everybody. We're going to do our ratings for Say Anything, and I am stumped.
Yeah, I didn't really think about my rating too much.
I actually, so if I was, I've done this before.
I really wish everybody could see when Colton does his little, like, his arm, his elbows tucked in and his hands out, shoulder shrug. It's so charming.
This episode, I have truly been befuddled a number of times. It would be, to me, a 10 out of 10, maybe like 9.8.
Yeah, 9 point something if it was
if it was Is a Real Boy. Because I hope I'm stressing enough to people, to me at least, how great, like, I like almost historically, I think it should be talked about more. I actually think Is a Real Boy is an underrated album that...
I can agree with that. Yeah, definitely just on the music when it comes to rock and roll in general.
Right, and the people who will disagree are likely the people he was talking about at the time, which is kind of like the infinite joke of that record that I love. It's meant to be underrated because it is also the album that, like, kids growing up in uncool parts of the world are always going to gravitate towards.
Yeah.
And I hope there are still bands like that out there for kids in a similar position. Godspeed. But
yeah, it's tough.
It's a 4 out of 10, everything else averaged in. There's no way it can be better than that. One
for
good
all
record,
three of those albums, it's a 4 out of 10.
Well, because Was a Real Boy, I'm counting as a separate one anyway. And so that's one amazing record, one so-so record, which is Was a Real Boy, two straight awful. This is maybe an emotional response, but
it's understandable. You're getting some things off your chest.
Five out of 10, if I'm doing the Weezer average. I'll give it a 5 out of 10. They're close to a Weezer average.
I was going to say, because I like that you said, when you said 4 out of 10, if you applied that to the following two albums, just strictly that. But when
I counted everything else, it would be lower.
Oh, I understand that. But I'm just saying, like, if we got a 10 for the first album, and this is how I kind of did it, and I could probably agree with a 4 for the following two albums.
That's fair.
So what does that average out to? I'll just go 6.5.
I have to make a statement, and because these ratings don't matter and they're all arbitrary anyway, I'll stick with my 4 out of 10 because it feels emotionally right to me to say 4 out of 10. So I want people to look back at this later and go, why did he give that a 4 out of 10? Like, I want it to be notable.
Okay. 4 out of 10. Mine is, yeah, I'm going to go 6.5 just because that's how good the first album is. And I don't necessarily, I'm certain, based off of this conversation, I'm certain that I like Say Anything, the album, more than you.
Likely. I think that
record... not likely. It's absolute. Think of
when I first bought
it.
How
you've been talking?
I was talking myself into liking it. That's the thing. Like when I talk about like how the self-deception, like I am the example of that. Like I was like, oh well, Mari and me has some interesting things, and he's Kings of Leon, and it was like a gradual,
I didn't like that he like calls out Kings of Leon like they're jerks.
And yeah,
like,
but the
buddy, look in a okay. I feel like we've attacked Max Bemis enough.
But it is like I didn't get to mention this. I don't think we'll get to talk about him again. But anyone, if you're also interested, is there like a Say Anything Before He's a Real Boy like that I would be interested in? I think We'll Erase All Life on Earth is great. I love it. And when they played it live in LA that night that I saw them, it was so cool. I don't know. I love that track. That's it. I got nothing else. I'm all empty. Right.
Yeah, if anybody...
I'm going to have to apologize to Rob for this episode. I've been very emotional.
It's okay. Well, I'm going to make you less emotional. We actually have a fun event coming up.
What's up?
We got our 1 year. It'll be April 6th that our next episode is going to come out on. And our first two episodes came out on April 7th of last year.
That is extraordinary.
So we are almost to the day. Who would have thought? Because, you know, usually when you release something on a Friday, the next year, that Friday. So the math does work out. We're coming up on a year. So this next episode will be an anniversary of sorts. We did talk about filming us, or putting out the video. I'm against it.
Are you against it now? I am relieved to hear that. Yeah. I've been working out and stuff in prep for that to happen. Not really.
Yeah, no, I'm just looking at us both right now going like, they don't need this.
This is not, this isn't going to play better.
Yeah, believe me, for the amount of friends who have been like, it would just be more interesting to watch you guys talk. I'm like, no, it wouldn't.
I don't understand that premise either. I don't understand.
I did actually say earlier, I wish people could see you doing the shoulder shrug. But you know what? I'll just take a selfie.
Hey, I'm doing it right now, everyone.
All right. So Colton knows the artist already, which broke my heart. I thought it was going to be a secret. And I told him, I think I have the perfect artist for our 1 year. You just went like, oh, yeah, it's Plank. I was like, well, shit.
We had thrown around some ideas
before.
Weezer was our first true band that we covered, right? But go ahead.
And so I wanted to see if, A, we can see if the listener, just for shits and giggles, can predict it. And if you would have predicted it, you got to be completely honest with me. Do you think these hints would have landed for you?
All right, I'm ready. Hit me with them.
So my first hint would have been baseball.
I would have gotten it.
You would have not gotten it.
I would have gotten it. I know there's like, only one band you and I know of.
Say Anything has a...
I would not have, because there's one band I know of.
Brand new.
It's the song that you would always talk to me about, like, because what are the great baseball songs? We'll likely maybe talk about this.
What other great baseball? John Mellencamp?
John Fogerty, yeah. Mellencamp. Put me in, coach.
The second time John Mellencamp's come up this episode.
Weirdly. He's got to be on the bands mentioned. I won't forget him this time.
Well, then, yes. I think you would have gotten it because my last hint was going to be Natalie Portman.
Is there... Okay. Is there another one? Is there a third? Or
I think the third might have been maybe Game Over or Eponine. Or Eponine.
I want to believe I would have gotten it from baseball. If you would have mentioned Natalie Portman, I definitely would have gotten it. Yeah. But I would have had to have asked you to remind me the name of the band, maybe.
That's fair. So for the listener, now's the big reveal. We're going to be doing, because of the fact that our first episode is Weezer, I wanted to cover the better Weezer, or what I wanted Weezer to become.
This is like a sliding doors version of Weezer. Like, what would happen if they'd have gone left versus right?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. We get to have this like multi-universe scenario in just this universe where we get Ozma.
Ozma people.
We get Ozma.
Pasadena, California.
Yes, they are from. Idea.
I just like to say that to people. It's such a random place to be from. Anywho, what records are we doing?
They have four, right?
I see five.
Ooh, they might have five. So this will be, it's been a while since we've had this type of chore on our hands.
We're doing five records.
Doing five? Okay. Well, why would
I can
we
do this.
Not?
Yeah. I can do this. It's fine.
Yeah, we got Rock and Roll Part 3, Spending Time on the Borderline, Pasadena, Boomtown, and the Double Donkey Disc. And I feel like, actually, we might adjust this a little bit because I think some songs get kind of get recycled onto later albums?
Well, let's stick with the five, and if their one's a double, they double. But everyone, those are the five, at least. Enjoy yourself.
Yes, please listen along with us. Think of how much you would understand how angry Colton has been.
They don't care where this anger comes from. They just want it. And yeah, if you would have seen me record it, everyone, maybe this episode, you would have gotten the full effect.
I care about your anger.
I appreciate you, man. I love you.
Every Man Has a Molly is the worst song they've ever written.
It's just such an intellectually bankrupt thing to say. Like, I'm like so open. And we're back. And we're back to where we started, everyone.
When have I been intellectual?
Everybody, please have a good 2 weeks. Have a good just every day. Have a great day.
And get ready to celebrate the 1 year with Colton Day.
Yeah, we'll have nothing. I want to promise anything. I don't think we're going to have.
You know, we've made a lot of friends. Yes, you have made a lot of friends. Ooh. Why haven't you guys been bringing this?
Will, what's wrong with you?
You guys barely talk about me, Joey Attic.
Yeah. Ah, that's the best all right. one.
All right, guys, we're going to stop before we completely ruin ourselves. Enjoy your
goodness. Bye, everybody.